Genesis chapter 25. So we finished up chapter 24 last time. We saw how that Abraham had sent his servant back to his own country, to his own kindred, to find a wife for his son Isaac. And that the Lord, they really sought the Lord for guidance in this. He sent his angel ahead, prepared the way, and the servant was a man who really sought after God and wanted the Lord's guidance and prayed to him and asked for a sign, and God gave it to him just like he asked. And it's just a chapter full of this man praising God, giving glory to God for leading him in the right way. And he finds Rebecca and brings her back to Isaac. And we saw that the chapter ended with Isaac taking Rebecca to be his wife, and he loved her, and he was comforted after his mother's death. So that was, I believe it was 3 years after the death of Sarah. So she died when she was 127. That would make Abraham 137, because he was 10 years older. And then, after that, we get to chapter 25, and it says, "Then again, Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah. And she bare him Zimran, and Jokshan, and Medan, and Midian, and Ishbak, and Shua. And Jokshan begat Sheba, and Dedan. And the sons of Dedan were Ashurim, and Letushim, and Leumim. And the sons of Midian, Ephah, and Epher, and Hanok, and Abida, and Eldaiah. All these were the children of Keturah." So let's just go through this a little bit at a time. So I just said Abraham was 137. And so what do you do when you're 137 years old and your wife died and now your son's married off? Well, I guess you get married again. So Abraham takes another wife. He's 137 years old. It took him forever to have a son. He was 86 when he has Ishmael. Then he's 100 when they have Isaac. And at 137 years old, he's like, "I'm just getting started." Like that's kind of crazy. What happened? Well, the thing is, God didn't just give him a seed. God gave him strength. Go to Hebrews chapter 11. I know we looked at this before, but it kind of helps us to make sense of what's happening here. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 11. This passage is about Abraham, but specifically this is about Sarah. Hebrews 11:11, it says, "Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead." That's Abraham. "As good as dead. So many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore, innumerable." So it says that through faith, Sarah herself received strength, but Abraham also received strength. And this wasn't just a one-time thing. God gave him strength to keep on going, okay? It says, "And him as good as dead." That's talking about his body. Go to Romans chapter 4. Romans chapter 4 and verse 19, again talking about Abraham, it says, "And being not weak in faith, he considered not his own body now dead." Well, why would it do that? Why would he do that? Because it was as good as dead. He was well past the age. He was too old for this to happen. But not being not weak in faith, he considered not his own body now dead. Well, his body was as good as dead. What do you mean? He was delusional? No, he just wasn't considering his own body. He was considering the promise of God and believing in God, that God was able to perform what he had said. Verse 17, as it is written, I have made thee a father of many nations, before him whom he believed, even God who quickeneth the dead. That's where his faith was. His body was as good as dead, but he believed in the God that quickeneth the dead.
Yeah.
And calleth those things which be not as though they were. What does that mean? He speaks them into existence. His body was as good as dead, but God gave him strength. And at 137 years old, he's like, you know what? I'm feeling good enough. I'm ready to have more children. So he waits a few years after his first wife, Sarah, dies. And then he decides to take another wife. So back in Genesis, it lists the names of the children that he has by Keturah. I'm not going to get into most of them. Some of them you read a little bit about in the Bible. Probably the most notable one is Midian, that it mentions in verse 2. Midian, you might remember, is when Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers. He was sold to the Midianites. Later on, Moses, when he leaves Egypt, he sojourns and spends some time in Midian, and Jethro, his father-in-law, was a Midianite. There's also the situation that happened with Cosby. I'm not going to get into details there. But then you also read a lot about Midianites in the book of Judges. But again, a lot of times when there's a list of names of different people, well, he begat so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, there's a reason for that, okay? It's not just a list of names to make things boring. It's God recording these names because they were significant, especially to the nation of Israel. Big part of their history. God just wants to let you know where they came from. Okay, so verse 5, it says that Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. What is that saying? It's saying that there's a separation, that there's a designation, there is a birthright. Well, Isaac wasn't the firstborn, right? I mean, wasn't that Ishmael? Yeah, but Ishmael wasn't fully qualified. First of all, he was not the promised seed that God had promised to Abraham. And God wanted to make it very clear, no, Isaac, in Isaac shall thy seed be called, and you're going to cast out the bondwoman and her son. But there's also a distinction made in the wives themselves. There's three wives that we've mentioned. There's Sarah, there's Hagar, and there's Keturah. And we'll talk about that more when we get to the next verse. But when it says he gave all that he had unto Isaac, he's saying to Isaac, you're the heir, you're the sole heir. There's a separation, there's a designation, you are the heir. There's a birthright. He gave all that he had to Isaac. And he's also showing that he believed in the covenant and the promise of the Lord. This is all based on what God had told him. So verse 6, it says, but unto the sons of the concubines, which Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son while he yet lived, eastward unto the east country. So what is a concubine? Does this mean that Abraham had other wives that weren't mentioned? Probably not. Okay. I believe when it says concubines, it's referring to Keturah and Hagar. What is a concubine? A concubine is kind of weird to think about in our society. It's not something that's part of our culture. At least it shouldn't be. A concubine is like a lesser wife. She's sort of a wife, like they're married, she bears children, but she doesn't have really the same social status as a proper wife would have. I know it sounds weird, but that's what this is, okay? So just to kind of paint the picture of what this is, let's go back to Genesis chapter 16. And you'll kind of understand this, I hope, from this passage. I know we've covered this already, but just remember the situation. So Genesis chapter 16, in verse 2, it says, And Sarai said unto Abraham, or Abram, Behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. So Sarai is barren. She can't have children. She says, here's my maid. I'll give her to you to be your wife, but it's so that I can obtain children by her. She is not going to be the head of the household here. Well, Abraham is. But she is not like the chief wife here. She's not. She doesn't have the same social status. She's still considered a servant. Verse 3, And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. You can see she's still under the umbrella of Sarai, her mistress. Verse 5, And Sarai said unto Abram, My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom. And when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. So again, verse 3, it says, Sarai gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. So she is called a wife. But, verse 6, But Abram said unto Sarai, Behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. So you can see that she doesn't really have the same status as Sarai, who is Abram's true wife. Okay? What about Keturah? It says afterward that Abraham took another wife. Her name was Keturah. Go to 1 Chronicles chapter 1. And verse 32, it says, Now the sons of Keturah, Abraham's concubine, she bare Zimran and Jokshan and Medan and Midian and Ishbak and Shua, and the sons of Jokshan, Sheba and Dedan. So again, although it says Abraham took another wife, Keturah, it says here that she's his concubine. What does that mean? She's still his wife. But she's not like the main wife. She doesn't have the same social status as a real wife. Okay, it's kind of weird to think about. It's not part of our culture, but this is something that was very common in these times. You didn't have like the same kind of fertility treatments and all these other medical things to try and, you know, have children. A lot of times, and you'll see this throughout Genesis, you'll see it again later on with Jacob and his wives, that he ends up marrying two women, but each one of them gives him another wife, kind of like on the side, so that he can have children with them, because they weren't producing children at that time. So I just wanted to clarify what this is talking about. When it says unto the sons of the concubines which Abraham had, it doesn't mean that Abraham had some harem on the side and he's just, you know, piling up all these women. And it, no, it's talking about Hagar and Keturah. Okay, there's a distinction being made that he's got one like proper wife, that's Sarah, and his heir is the son of Sarah. And he is giving all that he has to Isaac. But to the sons of the concubines, it says that he gave them gifts and sent them away from Isaac, his son, while he yet lived eastward unto the east country. Verse 7, it says, and these are the days of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived, 135 years. So a score is 20. A score is 20. So 60 is 60. So it's 160 in 15 years. That's 175 years he was. Then Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man full of years, and was gathered to his people. You can see that the lifespan of man was decreasing. Because his fathers, I mean, they were living hundreds of years. And then suddenly Abraham's only 175 years old when he dies. But it's recorded that he was old. He was an old man, old age, full of years. So at the point where he lived, that was considered a really old age. His son Isaac is actually going to exceed him. He's going to be 180 years old when he dies. But this is a good old age. It says, and he was gathered to his people. Verse 9, and his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, which is before Mamre. So what happens is, even though he separates Isaac and Ishmael, and he has Isaac stay there, but then he sends the other sons away. Ishmael's one of them. He was already sent away back in chapter 21. But you see what happens is, because Abraham was his father also, at his death, at his funeral, when he's getting ready to be buried, his sons come together. So you can see that. Although there's a separation, there are times they're not like completely isolated. They're living in different parts. They're living separately, but in certain times, they're coming back together to do their duty as sons. Wow. And you can see that as a theme throughout this chapter, actually. And then where is he buried? Well, it says in the cave of Machpelah. That's the place that he bought of the sons of Heth, back in chapter 23, where he buried Sarah. Verse 10, the field which Abraham purchased of the sons of Heth. There it is. There was Abraham buried, and Sarah his wife. And it came to pass, after the death of Abraham, that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt by the well Lehi-Roi. So God had blessed Abraham. Abraham was a man who walked with God by faith. And you can see that is now passing on to his son Isaac. Why? Because Isaac also walked with God by faith. It says Isaac dwelt by the well Lehi-Roi. We talked about that a little bit last time. He was near that area when he came to meet Rebecca and she came to meet him. This is the same well where God met with Hagar before and showed her the well so that she could drink there in the wilderness. I mentioned last time that the story of Isaac in the book of Genesis is a lot shorter in comparison to the life of Abraham, the life of Jacob. There's a lot less that we're given about Isaac's life. So you want to pick up on all the details that are given. One of the details that we have about Isaac's life is that he's very much associated and connected with wells. Wells, wells of water. See, this is a desert area where he's living. Wells were very important. So, I mean, if you have cattle, these guys were shepherds. If you have cattle, if you have a group of people with you, I mean, that's just a safe, secure place to be. When I was in South Africa, we took a 12-hour drive from the coast to Port Elizabeth up to Johannesburg in the mountains. And we went through a lot of just very barren desert area. And when you pass these settlements that were founded like 100 or 200 or 300 years ago, a lot of their names would include like spring or fountain in the name, because that was very important when they were settled there. They were looking for a place that had water. I'm actually going to talk more about this theme in the next chapter. Because we're going to see that Isaac is constantly digging wells. And I believe that's a foreshadowing of Jesus Christ. Again, Isaac really represents the life of Christ. Okay, we got a few more minutes here. Let's go to verse 12. So it says, now these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bare unto Abraham. And these are the names of the sons of Ishmael, by their names, according to their generations, the firstborn of Ishmael, Nebajoth, and Kedar, and Adbeel, and Mibsam, and Mishma, and Duma, and Massa, Hadar, and Tema, Jeter, Naphish, and Kedema. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their towns and by their castles, 12 princes according to their nations. 12 princes. Why? Go back to Genesis 17. Genesis 17, and when God first, you know, told Abraham that a child would be born to him when he's 100 years old, and Sarah, 90 years old, is going to bear a son, and you're going to call his name Isaac, and Abraham's like, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. I mean, doesn't this just make more sense? I already have a boy. He's like, God's like, no, that was your way. We're going to do this my way. But he says, verse 20, and as for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him and will make him fruitful and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make him a great nation. So you just see here, he's not the promised seed, but God takes Abraham's prayer and his beseeching very seriously, and God just shows that he's willing to answer Abraham's prayer because of the relationship that they have. He says, okay, I've heard you. I'll make him a great nation. As a matter of fact, he'll beget 12 princes. And here you see the fulfillment of that. He lists them all out by name. Verse 17, and these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years old, and he gave up the ghost and died and was gathered unto his people. So 137 is not quite as old as the life of Abraham. I don't want to jump to any conclusions there, but it specifically says Abraham gave up the ghost, died in a good old age, an old man full of years. It doesn't say that about Ishmael. But it does say he was gathered unto his people. His offspring, his tribes, his children, verse 18, they dwelt from Havilah unto Shur, that is before Egypt, as thou goest toward Assyria, and died in the presence of all his brethren. And again, you can see the theme that his brethren, all his brethren, were there when he died. He died in their presence. So when they heard that he was unwell, that he's approaching death, all his brethren gathered together around him. And I think that's that just shows that even though they're divided, they're kind of spread out. When they hear, hey, my brother's unwell, it's kind of, you know, it's close to his time, we're all going to get together and we're going to be there for him. And I think that's really important. Okay, I think that's probably as far as we're going to get today. And we're going to save the second half of this chapter for next time. So just thank you all for being in Sunday school.